Good morning, everybody. It's 9 a.m. It is Thursday, October 10th, 2019. We're gathered for the County Administration Workshop in the Board of County Commissioner Conference Room. All three commissioners are in the building today, and a couple of us are currently here. First up today is Department of Business with our Transit Department, and we have item number one is Rail and Public Transit Division, Oregon Department of Transportation, ODOT Agreement number 33776. Morning, Scott.
Good morning. Thanks for having me. So this is the last of the agreements for the discretionary fund from the State Transportation Improvement Program, which is the payroll tax. We went ahead and applied and were awarded money or funds to increase our service Monday through Friday from 6:30 to 9:30 p.m. Currently, we only run till 6:30.
All right.
So this is going to provide an additional 3 hours of service throughout the evening, Monday through Friday.
In town only?
In town only.
Okay.
And different method?
Yeah, there's a different method, but real quickly, so it's about $500,000 we're getting, and the local match requirement is almost $125,000. The local match requirement is coming from the formula fund of the payroll tax that we get. So that is correct. To get you to your question, we're going to provide it with a different method. And so since we don't know what the demand for services is, it didn't seem like the most efficient way to provide services to continue with our fixed routes. Now, for example, if we used a fixed route system, it would take four drivers plus probably two dial-a-ride drivers for our door-to-door plus a dispatcher. And I think we can do it with this method with about three drivers and one dispatcher. So that's a reduction of about three drivers per day. What we're actually I like to think of it as service deployment. So the methodology is what's called on-demand transportation. So we're only providing the ride when someone demands it or when it's requested. We are going to do this in two ways. People will have access to an online app that they can request a ride based on their location, and then we will dispatch, or it will automatically be dispatched to one of our drivers that is out in the system. So instead of a continual circulation of a bunch of routes, there's drivers out there that are only going to provide the service when it's actually wanted. The other part of it, in order to make it equitable, not everyone has a smartphone or access to a smart device. So in order to
knows how to use it,
right? Or knows how to use it, and so in order to be compliant, that's why we will have a dispatcher on duty for those for that duration, so they can take calls. So people will also be able to call in. What I envision is after that call or request is made, a vehicle will show up within 30 minutes. The other advantage.
That's my phone. Sorry, I'll go turn that off now.
The other advantage of doing...
That's from the original Robin Hood, the cartoon, I believe.
Yes, it is.
I know that. Sorry,
I
digress.
That's okay. The other advantage of providing service this way is the same service that we would provide to people with disabilities is being essentially applied to the general public. So there's not these side-by-side services operating, which is what you see daily. So we have a fixed route, and then we have a complimentary service for those that can't use the fixed route. Since there's no fixed route, it's the exact same service for everybody. The service area is also going to be that. For people that have a disability that prevents them from using the fixed route, the service area is 3/4 of a mile on each side of a fixed route. So I provided a map real quickly in your agenda packet. That's where the service is going to be available. This is being tried a lot in California, a lot in some other states. There's a bunch of different names that it's going by. ODOT was really eager for us to attempt this because it hasn't been tried elsewhere. I look at this as
well. In Oregon?
No.
Okay.
So RVTD is running out a pilot project specifically for some small service areas in Ashland, but no one's really attempted to do it kind of on a broader geographic scale, which is what we're going to try.
That's awesome.
Here. Yeah, there's agencies that use this technique, and it's called first mile, last mile. We can call it whatever we want. And they're taking people to and from specific stops and so forth. But my vision is once we'll try it here because we don't know what the demand for late evening service is. And until we kind of establish that, let's try it this way. After a certain point, the demand for service will warrant a fixed drop. It just makes sense because it's too many people to provide with just individual drivers and smaller vehicles. So until we get to that point, which is a little over 2.7 passengers an hour, let's do it this way and see what happens. What I'm hoping to gain from this is not only provide a model for the state, but also a model internally. So this is something that we could roll out in other areas. So we know that there's demand, like pockets of demand throughout the city of Prince Pass or even a little bit further out in the UGB within the county. We can use this type of service deployment to test those areas because it is more efficient than just running a fixed route. So it's new technology, and that's kind of what we're looking at throwing out there. So that's kind of my two cents. There was a study that we did before you were here that looked at this specifically. And so that's where we're just rolling this out. I look at it as phase two. A lot of agencies utilize existing transportation network companies or providers, and the biggest names come to are Uber and Lyft. We could have went with that model because they are in town, and the reason I'm choosing not to, it is less expensive to use a TNC, but you lose control. So there's some issues such as safety, vehicle maintenance, driver background checks, ADA compliance.
TNC?
Yeah, it's called the Transportation Network Company.
Okay.
It's another acronym, but essentially what it means is Uber, Lyft. Right. There's a couple other ones out there.
Private sector stuff.
Right,
it's private
a way to say it without naming a company.
That's exactly right. But the issue with those companies that have been used in this type of service deployment is you don't have driver background checks, again. You don't have oversight and safety. There's no drug and alcohol testing. There is no compliance in terms of maintenance requirements. Our vehicles are under a strict maintenance requirement.
Well, and if we recommend one of those, we're on the hook.
You're right.
You sent me this guy, and and he, whatever. And yeah. I'm full agreement that you have to have some control. If we're going to recommend, we're in a way endorsing.
Correct.
And I would not feel comfortable.
This is better.
Yeah.
What's the cost of this service? If I was to call it 7 o'clock.
$1. It's going to be the same as if the fixed route, because I don't want to replace it with a fixed route and have the fare change.
Golly.
Yeah.
We're always big on
an expensive trip to dinner and back.
But another thing we're always big on is we're not competing with the private sector, like the cab companies and whatnot, because we're only going from their point of origin to a bus stop. We're not taking them from destination to the restaurant or destination to the doctor. Taking them to
there's a bunch of you're exactly right, but there's some agencies go point to point essentially, or it could be bus stop to point or point to bus stop.
Right.
I think it makes more sense to maintain the bus stop structure in some fashion.
You're not going to call a cab go from your home to the bus stop. You're going to go to a destination. You're going to go to a doctor's appointment. But we're just going from your home to the bus stop to put you in contact with public transportation.
Well, what it would be is either you're at a bus stop.
Unless it's the medical one or somewhere.
Right. So if you're at a bus stop and you would call for a ride so we could locate you, and then we would take you to the door of your destination, or we would take you from the door of your destination, depending on what type of service we're deploying, to another bus stop. So there's different ways we can do it. That's what I would envision it being, because, like I said, I want to remain some semblance of the bus structure.
The bus element to me is what segregates you from being in competition with a taxi cab.
Yeah, well, technically we're in competition now. Exactly. But
now all of a sudden you just started your own cab company, didn't you? And I don't think we did.
No.
Because we just said, well, does the cab company have a bus stop? Is there a bus system? No.
Well, and there's also that time constraint. So when you typically call a cab, that they're on their way once you call them. And same thing when you're going to be picked up, you can schedule those things and so forth. And us, it's you call or schedule, and there's a time frame window that we're actually going to be there.
Okay.
So that's what we'll do. It's going to take some software rollout. We're working on it. It's the software that we use now. There's a small portion in this grant for planning and monitoring. So the same consultant that wrote the first study will be brought back on board to monitor this and basically write up a report in terms of the results. So it's kind of an impartial third-party view, as well as collect the data for us. And there's some more tablets and things like that that we have to buy, which is how that ride gets distributed back to the driver, and we communicate with the office. So probably December is what I would shoot for.
Very good. You're continuing to find ways to innovate without asking for the taxpayers, local taxpayers' money.
Yes.
If I had a couple questions on another subject, I want you to get back with me on it.
Okay.
So, because it's not on. It's
not on the agenda.
It's on a different subject. But I have two questions.
Okay.
That will pertain to this subject.
Do we need to ask it?
I was wondering how. I think we talked about a while ago about you're not going to put any kind of route over to the VA clinic on Williams Highway. And I believe I asked you to go by and give them some information on your how do you get your your first mile, last mile, or whatever. Did you ever do that?
I sent somebody to go take care of that.
So I'm assuming that they were notified that this is the alternative. We go out right now at present time. We're not going to do that.
Correct.
And then also the master plan for the fairgrounds is getting ready to kind of kick off. You two will get that directly. I just talked about it yesterday with Tamara. But one of the big elements there is parking during huge events, big events, like if we were to have a soccer tournament and the fair going on the same time, what are you going to do with all these people?
Right.
And your organization came up more than once, so I would want you to work with Tamara. The possibility of a bus route from various places in the city.
Yeah.
Off-site parking.
I agree.
Work on a program that would handle that when those come up. You know, very much like Indianapolis 500, they have to find parking for 375,000 people, but it sure as heck isn't on-site.
Right.
So they have a system, and I'm sure we could come up with something.
We can easily come up with something, and go and throw this out there again. Since we're a recipient of federal money, we're not supposed to compete with private business. So that's called a charter type service. So there are some regulations that we have to meet and some requirements to make sure that we're not doing that. But it's not something that we can't overcome. We did it with the fair this year. That was I should have stepped in earlier on that one, but I don't think
we knew we had a parking problem until the last minute.
Right, true.
We had some people that had committed lots, and they go, "No, we're not going to do that."
Yeah, no, I have a lot of ideas. I've talked to Tamara about it, and I said, "Hey, even at the next fair, let me take care of this because you're exactly right. There's ways to utilize existing parking lots in town very conveniently to get people to and from that facility."
Excellent.
We may look to ODOT a little bit if we have a program like that because it's congestion mitigation. Because instead of all those cars converging on the fairgrounds and clogging that mess up out there, if we can keep those away, you know, that is congestion mitigation. So I don't know if that would, you know, you probably know more about CMAQ funds than I do along that line, but there's a possibility there might
be
some money
available
on spot, you know, for these spot events.
There might be. I've never seen someone utilize CMAQ dollars for not a reoccurring event. So if it's something that is happening three or four times a year, I've never really seen that model rolled out, but it doesn't mean that that's not a possibility.
But it may be because nobody's ever asked.
Right.
You know, so let's just keep all those channels open and stuff because I think, you know, and Commissioner Morgan was on parking the whole time on all the discussions and rightfully so. But I think it can be fixed rather than saying we have to provide all the parking for a large event, because as we change to an event center, there's going to be this thing's going to come up more than once. But, you know, if it's only a couple times a year, fine. I think we can address it in more creative ways.
Yeah, I'm more than happy to help.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Sounds good. Thank you so much for thinking outside of the lines.
So it would be next Wednesday. Is that the next meeting for this contract?
Correct. It would be the 16th.
Is it here?
It would be at the Ambassador.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Make sure it makes my calendar. And then I'm happy to say we did actually receive an electric bus. So if you see it around
town.
Hey!
Yay! Really? No kidding.
Yeah, if you will see it around town. It'll be about 30 days before we put it into service. We got to get it ready and equipped. But you'll see test drives and things like that around town.
So you have the charger infrastructure in place?
Yes. Well, that's a two-folded answer. So it's not at our facility. So I got caught where in a kind of a bind where we were behind in terms of getting that installed. But Ryan graciously stepped forward at facilities and said, hey, we have 480 power up here. We'll install your chargers up here. You can
Access Dimmick.
Yep, you can access our facility until you get that taken care of. So he stepped up when I was in a tremendous quandary. So I was very appreciative for his help.
That's excellent.
What kind of feedback are you getting on the app?
I get the latest feedback is because of our, we're sending out vehicles that don't have the AVL system in it. That's the feedback that I'm getting internally, as well as people calling saying they can't see the bus.
Okay. AVL is?
Automatic vehicle location. So there's a tablet and a GPS unit and a modem in the vehicle, and it just keeps pinging it back and forth. And we have a few vehicles in service that don't have that equipment on it.
Is that like the little dot that shows up on my wife's car's mirror to let me know there's a car in the blind spot?
Nope. This is a map that somebody can pull up on their smart device that will tell them if they're at a stop. It'll tell them when the next bus is arriving. Or where is the next stop or directions therefore.
That's pretty cool.
It's very, very
virtual
cool.
Map and timing.
That's exactly right. And what Commissioner Morgan was asking me is, what have we heard back? There's been some feedback. A lot of people like it. But when I'm talking to people on the phone and I'm like, hey, you can use the app. And they're like, well, I've been using the app, but I never see the vehicle. I'm like, what's going on? So I found out there's a few vehicles that we've had to place in the service that weren't originally equipped with this. So I'm working through those issues, and we're trying to get them back to install equipment on all of our other vehicles.
That sounds like a pretty good size financial undertaking. Yeah. I mean, you're thinking of all the other vehicles. The new ones all come equipped with it,
mm-hmm.
But if you're going back to retrofit,
It's actually more plug and play, so it's not that difficult. But the expensive part was the company Route Match. They have offices in Denver and Atlanta, so they were flying people out as well as an installer coming down from Portland. So what I've done is I recruited local private contractors to learn this, how to install this equipment. So we have somebody here locally on site.
Is it something that, for instance, I hesitate to put that on a bus that's got 962,000 miles on it because it's probably the end of its useful life.
Right.
Is that something you can put in that bus for a while and then take it out?
Yes.
And then you'll put it in the next bus and then it's all set, or put it in another vehicle?
Yeah, we had two vehicles with it that were pulled from service, and they're the exact same as the new electric buses that we had. So I had them pull that equipment out of and the buses are the exact same type. Okay. They're just older. So I had them pull that equipment out and test it and get ready to put it in the electric one. So you're exactly right. We can pull it out and move it from vehicle to vehicle. The problem is the last vehicle I ordered, it was supposed to be installed, and it arrived and it was not installed. We paid for it. It wasn't installed, and I didn't realize it. And then the other one is there was vehicles that were never I never had the intention of putting them out on service in the fixture out that we ended up having to, and so they were never originally equipped.
So the plugs weren't there and the harness wasn't there or something.
Add
the equipment.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so it's not only adding, it's not just showing where it is on a map, it's actually announcing in the vehicle where the vehicle is at, as well as an LED sign that says the next stop, which is a requirement of the ADA. So the driver normally just announces but now this is doing it automatically.
That's kind of a spin-off from the automobile industry, because I bought a car one time, and I said that was not from the factory. I said, no, it wasn't from the factory. It was put in the trunk at the factory. So it was an intake manifold and carburation system, and that was in a box in the trunk when the car arrived at the dealership, and the dealership had to install it for it to be considered a... And it still, you could not say it came from the factory that way. It came from the factory as an option. Dealer installed factory option.
Yeah, so all the vehicles that we order are going to have that installed as part, because that way I can expense it to the actual grant. So everything that it takes to put a vehicle in service, it gets
probably would lower the stress level at a bus stop, knowing that the bus is, yeah, it's four blocks away here.
Well, somewhat, but most people, because they've gotten used to it, some people don't have a smart device, and the other group of people just have a phone, and they look, and they see the number, and they call. So what it does is it allows us in the office to run this map, so we can just look and see where the bus is. So instead of radioing, hey, Route 10, where you at?
You can answer.
We can just go, oh, yeah, they'll be there in 2 minutes. So it helps us that way. Eventually, as we progress, more and more people will start using it.
Sure.
We good?
As DHS gives out smartphones instead of regular phones, we'll probably be a lot better off.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you, Scott.
Thanks, Scott. Nice work.
Next up is our finance report and business update with Arthur O'Hare.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
So a few things that I thought I would bring forward. Fee changes. So we're in the middle today, or tomorrow is the due date for the departments to get in any fees that they want to update, change, add to, or take away. I'll compile that probably on Monday, I'm thinking, and have it as part of the packet for next Thursday. So next Thursday you should be having the packet of changes to all the county fees, and then we'll move that to the weekly business, and where we'll set a public hearing, and then after the public hearing, adopt the fees. So
the fees take.
Yes.
Have you got anything from Mike Weber yet?
No. The only two that have turned in is Sheriff and BOPTA.
Can you reach out again to everybody and say,
yeah,
last chance by such and such a date? Because I know we had to wait for an advisory committee meeting to run some stuff on the animal shelter. So.
Okay. I'm sorry. I immediately thought public health. Yes, I've heard from the animal shelter, but I haven't received it back yet. But I have talked to them.
Okay.
Laura, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
But it's still Mike's department. So.
Right. But I wasn't thinking animal. I was thinking public health. But so I've talked with animal shelter, and I should be getting something from them.
You should also be getting something from Mark Stevenson regarding.
Yes, correct. I've talked with him.
Okay.
But I haven't seen it yet. He hasn't turned it in.
So before you finalize, is it possible to put some amounts to department heads and just say, hey?
Yeah. And I have, I've sent out every week. I haven't sent it out this week, but I've sent out every week a reminder to say, October 11th. So I will specifically tag those folks. October 11th is a soft deadline. I mean, that's just get it into me so that on Monday I can compile
it. Right.
So, if they get it to me on Tuesday or Wednesday or what, it's the real hard deadline is when we go to the weekly business session and we set a public hearing on these fees.
So. When is your potential rollout? Do you try to do these fee changes beginning of the calendar year?
Always on January 1st.
Okay.
It's the only constraint we have is through the ORS is that we can't change a fee more than once every 6 months. So if we've changed a fee within the past 6 months, we can't change it again until after that. But our charter requires we have a resolution now that lays out the process. So the process takes about 90 days from start to finish. So rather than doing it haphazardly throughout a year and taking all these 90-day windows and public hearings for every nickel and dime, we found that it was more efficient for us internally and also more
consistent and expected for the public to think that, okay, January 1, we're going to have new fees. The county will establish their new fee structure every January 1, so that if we're working with the planning department, we know that January 1 there might be new planning fees or new changes in the fees, or the parks department, or the fairgrounds, or all the other. So that's the approach that we've taken. I think from all the feedback I've gotten, which hasn't been much, but from what I've gotten, the people like the consistency of seeing it once a year, January 1.
Well, and it's directly opposite budget, because they got a lot of work to do with budget. So let's
yes.
not try to get two things at once. Plus, if you initiate it in January, you kind of get an idea how it's affecting the budget.
Right, and so you can work it into your budget when you start projecting the next
guessing.
Fiscal
you
year.
You can say, well, I've got 6 months of track record here.
Right.
And this is what, look how it looks, I think how it's going to affect the budget.
Right, and typically so many of our fees are seasonal in the sense that during the summertime you get an uptick in the activity. So it's pretty hard to change those things right in the middle of your busy season. So it makes more sense to do it in that first of the year time frame. I think so.
Do any of those departments have automatic fee increases that are tied to CPI, or are most of them just based on how much it costs? And
The exceptions to our process are that if fees are set by state or federal. So if we, building safety is a good example of that. Some of their fees coming down are state or federal established fees, clerk, same thing. So the quick answer is no. I'm not aware of anything that automatically ratchets up. But if it's happening outside of this process, I don't know that I would necessarily be aware of that. Are you aware of that?
No, and even like the feedback I gave is we've always made it have a direct correlation to cost. Mm-hmm. So if they can show what it's costing us, then the fee is to be reasonable to that. We can't be making a profit necessarily,
yeah,
but we got to be covering.
Exactly right.
We got to be covering our costs. And there was something too when Parks was trying to change the amount they're charging for candy bars and stuff like that, that they can't be cheaper than the store. You can't be subsidizing the cost from other businesses.
You're in competition with the little store.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's not. But that to us is a pass through. So we're not. If a candy bar costs $1 and you sell it for $1, that's not a fee. That's just a pass through cost that you're.
But we also have to be mindful that if you're selling it for $1, then Sand Creek Market selling it for $2.25 because they have overhead.
Yeah.
You can't be in direct competition.
But you're probably going down to that market to buy those things to bring them back for the convenience of the campers. So
I hope not.
Well, you know, we're not getting our candy bars by the wholesale truckload, I don't think. So
right. Have you been to Costco this week? They're on sale.
No.
Really? The full-size candy bars.
Well, for
Halloween.
It's Halloween.
So I'm not talking the candy bags. I'm talking the boxes of
full-size
bars.
There you go.
Are all
so we're not competing.
Right,
we're buying them
just
from Costco, full price.
I have a mom that passes out full-size candy
home
bars.
Home of a 25-pound jar of peanut butter.
5 gallons each. This is America. We can afford
it. You get a garden trowel instead of a knife.
So yes, I appreciate what Commissioner Morgan and I usually include this in my introductory when we actually have the fee payment or fee change process, is that fees are supposed to cover our costs. We can't be making a profit, and we can't be competing with the private sector. So those are a couple other constraints that we have on our fees. But not many people are competing with the clerk recording or things of that nature.
I can tell you I am excited that some of the recommendations you're going to be seeing is lowering the fees as well.
Oh, good. Wow.
Good.
So that is something that we're also always trying to be
That's
mindful.
That's not what I'm hearing from my department, sorry.
Well, the one from Mark Stevenson is going to put a tiered and it'll be a lower cost for
some things,
kennels. So the kennel stuff that he worked with the Public Health and Animal Shelter Advisory to have a reasonable, for the sake of compliance, for the sake of getting the process going. So there's a multiple step process, and we're finding terminology and process to be caused it to not be being done anymore. So they're trying to get it back on track, which I was impressed with.
Yeah, good.
Good deal.
A couple just FYI. So the auditors, our annual audit, will begin on Monday, October 21st. So that's a week from this coming Monday. So we're kind of pushing through trying to get all of our financial statement information up to date. This is the June 30 financial, so July 1 of 18 through June 30, 19. And this is the audit. So auditors should be here in about a week, a little over a week.
So there have been questions when the presentation, they had some suggestions of things that we do differently in the audit and their report last year. I'm just kind of curious if there's anything that we're doing differently based on those recommendations.
Well, we do write them down. I can't think of, the only one I can think of at the moment is that we were asking to ensure that we had some comparisons from prior year to current year in the sense of, you know, fund balance or volume or transactional volume. I believe there were some requests on that were more programmatic in the sense of, are we being more efficient? Are we being more effective? And that's not really the focus of a financial audit. So in that part of the discussion, no, the auditors are not going to do a performance audit or a program audit. I mean, they could, but we would end up paying for it. This is a financial audit, making sure that we're accurately reporting the financial status of the county. So as far as financial comparisons, yes. But the discussion part that went into the program efficiencies, no, we're not, the financial folks don't do that unless we want to pay for it. Yeah. Something different.
I didn't ask what they don't do.
Yeah.
And maybe this isn't the right audit, but when, who's the company that's our auditors right now?
Moss Adams.
Thank you. When they came recently to talk to me, they said, what have you done with our recommendations that we gave you at our last presentation? I said, that's a great question. And so they're under the assumption they made recommendations to us in the last audit.
Yeah, so, and we do. We have a constant communication with them as far as making sure that we comply with or do things. Sometimes
I would like to
we
see
disagree.
That more specifically. I would like to see the report recommendations that they said, and
you should have already received a copy of any letter or management letter that they have.
I would like an opportunity for you to come before all of us, and let's go through those items and see where we're at with them and see if anything needs to be addressed for the sake of us being responsive to recommendations from an auditor we pay a lot of money for.
Okay.
I didn't realize the report that was given were as strong recommendations as they thought they were. And I didn't realize they thought they were stronger recommendations than I realized until they're in my office asking, didn't you remember we said this? No. So I just an opportunity for us to...
Yeah, I'm not sure. We like I said, we've talked to Moss Adams numerous times over the last several months. So I'm not sure that there's any... But replying back and tying a bow on that little...
Just making
loose end.
Sure that we're aware and we can answer that. Yeah.
It surprises me that they wouldn't come and ask you that question. How are you coming along
well,
with our recommendations?
I'm sure we have. That's what I'm saying.
They were going to be working with Sandy because you were gone.
Yeah. But Sandy is actually point. I've assigned her point to... Okay. Point person on the audit for obvious reasons, I think, for various reasons. So up to speed on that. So so I'm sure we have responded to all the issues that were outstanding. Whether I've communicated that with the board very efficiently or effectively may be a different question. So let me do that.
Awesome.
Good. We'll go for a walk around the building and then come back to give you a report.
I give you for it.
But he does all he's thinking.
No, blame it on IT. So, so and then just as a quick follow-up, I do remember I am in the process of looking at an overview for the countywide. Hopefully by the end of this month, or that's my plan, by the end of the month, I'll give you a first quarter overview. So I understood, and I listened to the report last meeting on Tuesday, that you were wondering or asking, where are we at with the marijuana dollars? So I put together a quick, this is the money in, this is the money out, budgetarily. Of course, we don't have actuals for the current fiscal year, and we just...
Have we received any money?
We've received, like I said here, this is pretty accurate. You can see where we went. We budgeted 60, and we're anticipating 85 last year. I think we actually received at the end of, as of June 30th, June 30th, including the accrual of the money that we actually received in July, we received actually $90,000. So we budgeted $85,000 for this current fiscal year. Last fiscal year, we actually received $90,000, and that's on the 3%. That's our local marijuana tax. For our state marijuana tax, last year through June 30, well, including accruals for the fiscal year, we actually received $1 million. So our budgeted numbers for the current fiscal year are more closely aligned with what we had actually received this last fiscal year.
And this doesn't actually include...
This doesn't include the
mental
health dollars.
From the mental health or the,
right.
The whether it's the 10% that goes to counties versus the 15% that goes to mental health.
Well, no.
Putting it all in together under the 17%?
The state 17% is just the county portion. As far as what Sean received in her prevention or the mental health dollars, from my point of view, I don't care where DHS gets their money. It's a grant to us to do certain things. And so just like any other grant, it's got strings attached, and this is how you need to use it. So Sean's money is coming through DHS. They may be receiving it through their allocation of mental health or of marijuana dollars. But for us, it's not marijuana per se. It's a state grant. That's what it is.
Okay. So you're not tracking that we're actually getting more marijuana tax dollars.
That's not what I just said.
Because it's not the county portion. It's tracking via a state grant.
Right.
But
we know how much
the marijuana source.
We know how much Sean is getting. But as you are probably aware, my understanding has been that was a one-time contribution also, that initial $200,000 that she got last year. And there was no... In fact, the discussion was that that will not be available in future years. But that would be a good question for Sean, who's keeping a little better track of what the most current discussions are with the state regarding funding her programs. Her programs are being funded through the state. Where the state gets their money, marijuana, general fund, tax dollars, that's... The state can allocate those however they want. So, no. So the quick answer is no. I am not including that in the marijuana dollars that you see here.
These are dollars that we can spend where we want.
Yes, actually, both of these revenue sources are part of our general fund.
Okay.
They come into the general fund. They're discretionary dollars that we can allocate to. Yes, they are.
The 3% is not... discretionary. It had very specific language in the ballot on what it could be used for.
I suppose that's, you could put it that way.
Technically, legally accurate.
Well, technically, legally. It goes into the general fund, and the general fund is being used to support.
But the ballot language that was voted on said what it could be spent on.
Law enforcement. It was pretty broad.
It was specific.
Yeah.
Law enforcement treatment.
I'll give you that. I will give you that. You are correct.
It only happens once a year, so
thank God.
So, No, usually you're pretty sharp on those things.
So. Yes. I'm having trouble understanding what I'm looking at.
Okay.
That local 3%.
Yes.
At 85,000.
Correct.
That's our local on top of.
That's a sales tax on what we
right
purchase
for our local dispensary.
So that comes right in. The state 17%.
Yes.
The 17% confuses me because we're just getting a kickback from the 17% they're getting. We get an allocation.
Right.
It's not 17% of anything.
3% of 10%.
3% of 10%.
Of course.
It is.
That's about right, but it varies. I mean, the counties get 10%.
I've got a formula for the 40% we're going for at the state level. I've got a formula for that, and it's frightening.
So the counties get 10%.
The state collects 17,
and 10% go to
10% of that 17
after expenses.
Our portion equals about 3% of what they give to counties.
Right, but it's a formula driven. It's not 3%. It's based on the population is half
and canopy size,
and then the other half is based. Yeah,
on and nowhere does it. Nowhere does the production and exportation from our state, which from our counties, is 40% between Jackson and Jersey.
Right.
You would think if you've got 40% of the supply chain, you should probably get more than 17% of the 10% of the 5% of the 2% of the 8% of the 20% of the 40% that I'm going for.
You had more numbers in your head because there was a proposal to change it that didn't actually go through.
Half of it is based on population. The other half, as I recall, is based on the number of dispensaries in your locale, in your county. So since we have very few...
Which in our area is not a big deal because you can pick this stuff out of the cracks in the sidewalk.
Right.
It's not like you reach over the fence and grab a couple buds off your neighbor's plant, they'll never know they're gone.
So what I wanted to point out on this is that...
Tells me who your neighbors are compared to mine.
Revenue-wise, we're fairly strong on our revenue projections on what we're getting in. Commitment-wise, which I think is where partly the discussion was on Tuesday, was what have we committed against these funds? So you can see the prior year that just ended June 30 of 19, that really was an initiation year. We didn't really start discussing this until after last year's budgets were performed. I think in August we had some discussions on how we're going to allocate the various fundings, including PILT and SRS and all the different, including these marijuana dollars. So this current year, I think we have more data points. We have more information, a better handle on actually how much these funds are going to generate or these revenue sources. And so we have committed $725,000 of that $1 million that is coming in towards these four items that you see here. I will point out that the four school prevention folks that are part of Sean Martinez's program were supplementing. That 125 is a supplement. That's not how much it costs. It costs much more than that, those four staff. But she's using her own dollars currently, some of her own grant dollars that are coming to
make it up the difference.
And we're making up the difference. So that number is, at least we anticipate that number to go up, that 125 support to go up over the next couple of years.
I don't mind leaving that 275, 3.5 actually, if you go to 1085.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mind having that as kind of a cushion if something pops up.
Right,
we'll have a little bit in there, and it kind of might have a little bit of carryover in it. But I think these dollars are very, very important that they go out and be used. Mm-hmm. But, you know, for instance, if we get a program that comes in and say, you know, where are we going to fund that? You've got a little bit of cushion there. You can say, yeah, okay, you know, it's $112,000. Yeah, we can do that out of this.
Can you use it for stuff like sheriff radios or dispatch consoles?
Well, as Commissioner Morgan pointed out, the 3% has some broad constraints on it for law enforcement support.
Right.
We committed it when we first did that.
Just
by
policy?
It, correct, and it's going towards the school outreach officers.
Right.
Yeah.
And we were committed to doing that because we wanted to fund that first kind of,
sure.
I think. Was
right.
They had asked that the 3% go through, since treatment was a part of it, that it go through the LADPC recommendation, which was the three school outreach, technically four school outreach officers.
But I don't think we'd ever get any pushback at all. Well, that's a wasted place.
Yeah.
And I think it's a really strong message.
Argument,
that's what.
Yeah.
Well,
I think also the citizens like the one for one, that tie of saying this is what the money is coming in and this is where it's
going.
I think that's a real strong message for our constituents to see that we're making that connection there. And I think this shows that we're making that connection. I do want to point out, just as in a general sense, although we didn't say marijuana dollars in money directly to the sheriff department, but we did increase our transfer to public safety, sheriff, DA, juvenile, by $250,000 this budget year. So I don't show that in the commitment column of the marijuana dollars, but it is
what
the general fund is sending.
Maybe.
But
I mean,
that's up to the board.
It'll have to be renewed. It's not a long term.
Correct. It's an annual.
Okay.
Annual budget transfer. So as you can see, there is a little bit of room left. There may be some discussion about providing more support for some activities in code enforcement, marijuana problems. So that will probably come before the board, but in the near future. But I think there is some concern in the code enforcement program that they're being a little bit overwhelmed with, and you're aware of that.
Very
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so there may be some tie-in back to say, can we support some additional help at this point in time? But I don't want to steal anybody's thunder, and I don't want to preempt, the process that department directors are going through mm-hmm. with their liaison. So that differential there between the $1,085,000 coming in and the $725,000 going out in this current fiscal year could be narrowed.
That would be a source if. Mm-hmm. Code enforcement came to us and said, hey, I need help. That would be a place you could get the money because it is available.
Yeah.
Well, and it's for purpose for that.
And it's, directed.
Let me ask another fringe question.
Sure.
Could we use some of that money to clean up a property? Marijuana money.
Well, aside from the 3%, from the 3%, unless you can tie that back to law enforcement.
I would say no more than 3%.
Okay, there
right.
we go.
Right.
So
that's what I was picturing.
Aside from the 3,
it's all going to personnel right now.
Right. But I'm just asking. I don't know the constraints. So.
Well,
but it's all promised already through personnel. So
Well, it is without the contingency. And I know that occasionally we have these costs. And we've been able to recover them by auction and so on. So I'm just asking.
I don't remember the restrictions. The restrictions on the 17% was, or did we just dedicate that it would be primary law enforcement? But
I don't know of any restrictions on the 17.
Okay, but that's how we have the code enforcement
money.
Person. Yeah. We have Augustus, and we have a school resource officer.
Well, because here's why I'm asking. I'm seeing an opportunity to advocate for code enforcement and that to enhance their service there because they're so far behind. Could we get another part-time person or whatever it is?
I would sooner support a position than just a cleanup site.
Right. Yeah, and I was just trying to
priority wise
think further down. Yeah,
but that's up to. I'm waiting for their recommendation.
Right.
And then, but the question I was going to have, I think, is tied to yours. We clean up properties and then lien them to get that money back. Can we use this as a loan?
Kind of a stop
opportunity?
Yeah.
You know, we get it.
Fill in.
Oh, how are we going to, boy, it's $80,000 or $60,000 to clean that property. We just don't have the money. Could we borrow out of that? And then when we retrieve the money back at sale, put it back into this fund?
Well, that's a little awkward.
We're spending most of our money out of the property reserve right now for the cleanup. We have it itemized or segregated, so we know how much we're paying in cleanup. We know how much money is coming back, either through liens or through property sale. So that's already being done.
It's already being
done.
When all of a sudden we have a property to clean up and property owner says, hey, we've lent all our money out and we're not getting it back.
If we get to that point,
we're not there.
We're not there.
I was just looking at it as use the word slush fund.
Well, not slush fund.
Revolving loan fund.
Legally, we can loan between funds. We can do loans between funds. That's legally allowed through budget law. Okay. We can loan between funds. If it's a current year in and out, it doesn't necessarily have to be budgeted. If it goes beyond a fiscal year, so if we loan money this year and it won't be repaid until next fiscal year or some future fiscal years, then it needs to be budgeted. We need to include that loan in the budget and show that pay.
To the folks out here, when we say we're going to clean up a property, I want to clean it up. I don't want to pay it. But we clean it up, but we don't have the money. Yeah. And so on and so forth.
Well, there's a point we have to stop cleaning up properties because we won't.
Well, that's true.
There's hundreds of them.
And it's solid waste agency that needs to be going to about, if there's a loan program to that, is probably the funding mechanism we need to keep talking about. As far as the resources and revenues this year, on what's been received, the problem is we don't know how many grows are out there. We don't know how many grows will be out there next year. How has the cost of transition from recreational and medical switch to hemp, and what's the outcome on our revenues? So I don't know that we can necessarily count on a consistent revenue, and we should not spend it all away before we actually know. We're only in the second year of receiving
it. See where it settles.
Right. Yeah. We don't have a lot of data points, which is obvious when you look at the budget variations here.
Yeah. I'd be interested in what do we get back from medical versus recreation? Because I know all these growers, right, or a good portion of the growers.
We don't get anything on medical.
Right, we don't get revenue, yeah.
Okay, well, what people who are growing medical last year all went to hemp this year. We don't get anything from that.
Well, I don't know. We'll talk to Mark.
They have a surplus rule now where they can sell direct, and so there might be a little tiny bit of revenue coming out.
Well, our 3% is what, in practical terms, this is what our treasurer goes out and collects from the store, from the storefront, the dispensary. So anything happening outside of that that store...
Actual registered?
Yes, is not...
Tracked?
Is not captured in that 3%.
Unless there's a bust.
So those questions might be more applicable to our community development director, who is keeping track or seeing, I guess, the volume of hemp transactions going through, hemp transactions, but the permits and the
licensing,
the land use things. Going there.
There's none for hemp. I was thinking the very same thing.
Well, you have to get a permit.
Sure.
You have to get a
only
permit.
With the state.
With
you don't
ag,
have to get any local permit.
Yeah. You know, it'll be interesting to find out how many.
We're going to come up with a compliance certificate or fold it into the. We're proposing to come up with including hemp in the compliance certificate so that we would get some revenue for future enforcements. That's coming around.
I thought though Mark was saying he's seeing an uptick in transactions and revenues based on the hemp industry. Is that not so? I thought that's what he was saying.
I'm not sure then.
Yeah.
Because I don't think they need a local permit whatsoever. It's like growing strawberries. You can start tomorrow. Even though it didn't sell like strawberries. You don't have to get a permit from ODA for strawberries.
I'm interested to see what Curry's commercial business license is going to work, how it works out.
And ours is kind of a very similar fee. Compliance certificate, same kind of revenue and as a business license. So, and a way to really track what's going on. because the state's.
Well, I agree with Commissioner Morgan. We're not sure. This thing is evolving. Gosh.
Yeah.
Who'd ever thought that you went from 17,000 acres to 62,000 acres of hemp in one season?
I know, right?
That's got to really, from a supply and demand side. Oh my gosh.
I pocketed.
And as it filters through the dispensary transactions and the licensing, what impact will that have on our revenue stream for the state revenue from the marijuana sales? So, it could be a strong for the next season or so, but I don't know. We'll have to see. It's still a fairly new program, so not sure how much the state's charging, how much their expense is.
I had frost on my windshield this morning.
Me too.
Yep.
I wonder how that affects our.
It impacts it. It's been all over
it
the
does,
news.
Yeah. Yep. There's some mold issues and.
Well, I was listening to one fellow say that he anticipates that about 60% will be gone next year. 60% of our growers, of our
farmers. Oh, that bell curve is going to correct that quickly?
Yeah.
Isn't that some?
Yeah, that's a big number.
Not to take it further, but there's a big concern that is not being addressed yet, and that's a ditchweed component. These people that tried hemp didn't work out, the 60% don't grow it next year, but their field still pops up with some. And it starts turning into a noxious weed that affects everybody else's plants. I guess in the Midwest, there's a ditchweed belt where they can't grow hemp or cannabis because this ditchweed, like star thistle, infects it, pollinates it, and you can't grow it there. It's from World War II, I think they grew it for textile reasons. So now they can't grow very good cannabis there because it all gets this cross-pollination from a ditchweed. And that would be terrible for our recreational cannabis market in the future because we're in that Emerald Triangle and have something the world knows about.
World War II, they grew it for textiles. In Vietnam, they grew it for attitude.
For compliance and attitude.
Anything else?
On that note.
Yeah.
I've got an attitude.
An investment in Cheetos.
Don't you start.
Don't.
I did have a
back
question.
Back to the candy bar discussion.
My Cheetos stock just went up.
It would be nice to see the quarterly projections on where we are this year.
Yeah.
If we're going to be meeting expectations.
Yeah.
Yeah. Would we be interested in, when the season's over, having a end-of-season type report from planning on how that the industry shook up? Because it all goes through planning.
Yeah.
Right?
Do you need to go? We can ask that of planning without Arthur here.
Bye. Great report.
Thank you.
My apologies. Thank you.
Thanks for keeping it light.
So, I think the fact that we have had implementation of a program we created, it would be very appropriate to get a report on how it's been implemented, specifically what are the numbers look like, what have the issues been, what's had to be adjusted based on what we've gone through, and with any recommendations for edits or revisiting. I think that's absolutely appropriate.
Yep, and I think we should warn them and have them come in November because they're still in the grow season.
And plenty busy right now.
Yeah,
it should not have anything to do with the grow season.
Season wrap up.
Are we talking code enforcement?
No, we're talking about the marijuana enforcement. But I think it does fall under Denise as well.
Yeah.
But
she probably never has a slow season.
Yeah, but should it fall under Denise? Or should, it's a Mark question.
Mark, they could both come in. Ask Mark. I will ask.
I would like a wrap up from the Sheriff's Department, too, how their season went.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Since we did have
some. Of November, between Thanksgiving and New Year's, I think they should have some sort of an idea how the year went. That's my own personal.
No, I agree.
Maybe it's not appropriate.
We're well into other business. Or
well, back to our agenda. We have a couple things to take care of, and we can get back to matters from commissioners. So The Formosa Garden plat map is item 4A. And we have two plats this morning. We have a Dutch Henry subdivision plat and the Formosa Gardens plat. And so they are looking for our signatures and approval. So if you guys want to look at them, they're over there on the table. I can't quite reach them. That's the first one from
Formosa. Don't see the special
plan. They have it in here.
It's always somewhere. Thank you, ma'am.
If you guys want to look at it and make any motions you would like, as whether or not to approve it.
All you have to do then is understand it.
Got a little hammerhead, so to speak.
East West Street?
N.
I know, so why is it in there?
Well, I think all plats have to go through the county.
Almost. There's only eight counties. They don't have city surveyors.
Ah. I wonder if this is the duplexes I'm going to be
running. Right,
there's no conflict there, right? I'm just signing a procedural thing. But I bet it is. For most, it sounds familiar. I've been wanting a lot of duplexes.
I guess they're doing this type of a hammerhead thing instead of a cul-de-sac.
Yep. Because they still turn around for emergency, but not taking up so much space.
I would think that's a harder thing to turn around. You got to back out.
You're not just turning back.
You do a K turn, essentially.
Yeah.
But, you know, yeah. It looks like those are fairly small lots, 25, 2600.
I really think they're duplexes. But it doesn't seem. It might say somewhere. Read all that. Interesting. So this is Formosa. That's the first one. I happened to grab the right one.
You did.
This is McCarran Drive. So they're down off of N Street, and that's the McCarran.
Oh, right. I'm not sure where that is.
Where that is. If you go down the end, then Bel Air Drive.
Yeah.
And then the next one is Rogue Drive.
Oh, right, right.
Down there towards the end.
Now I'm with you. I think there is those two places.
I don't have any problem with it.
No? I'm excited. That could be a housing
crisis. Formosa Gardens Platinum.
So moved.
Second.
Any further discussion?
No.
And then all those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries 3-0.
Oh, there it is. There's my contractor. That's interesting.
Nicole. I don't think it goes anywhere. Will you just document that Commissioner Fowler acknowledged a potential conflict of interest as he may be a subcontractor on the project?
Sure. Yep. So let me sign this other one and I'll send you the whole thing, Dan.
So the next one is Dutch Henry Subdivision Plat. I'll wait for you guys to open that one up and take a look if you like.
There's your rubber band in case you're the last to sign. Dutch Henry. Black Oak Neighborhood. Kellenbeck.
That's off of River Avenue.
Right. It's Southwest Little Meadow Lane. And they gave a traditional, like, tomahawk hammerhead.
You know, something like that almost looks like it eventually they want to continue a street on. But these are both dead-ended, the two lots.
Right.
So
yeah, that is the difference.
Kind of awkward, but they're not going anywhere.
Good. Let's help solve the housing crisis. Yeah, I'm wiring 8 duplexes out off of, or no, it's 10 duplexes out off of Redwood Avenue.
Wow.
I'm like, those will help. Whoops. You want to do it after?
Sure. So if you guys are happy with that one, I'd entertain a motion to approve the Dutch Henry Subdivision plat map.
So moved.
Seconded.
Any further discussion?
Nope.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries 3-0. So item number 4C is resolution number 2019-036 in the matter of appointment of the Grants Passport Advisory. The recommendation is...
Tim Millard,
yeah. I have no problem with that. Were there other applicants?
No, but Tim Millard has been attending some meetings and stuff just because he's going to be a feel for it, and he still wants to be in there. You know, he's pretty active. I went to the meeting the other night. We did not have a quorum, but Tim was there.
I do know of another applicant that we have received in our office.
I don't know that.
Well, we saw it on the fire committee with the first question, two committees listed. And so... Annette, is it possible that you can check process that when somebody puts in an advisory board application that they're routed to both or all committees that they list? And
oh, because you can check multiple?
Correct. You can apply for multiple committees.
On one application. Gotcha.
Okay, good idea.
And so somebody yesterday talked to me about that they had applied for the Grants Pass Airport Advisory.
Oh, they did.
Is it closed? Is it?
Did they talk to anybody else about it or just you?
They've submitted the application to our office. It wasn't just talk to me. It was, hey, did you do anything with my application?
Okay.
And that's why I'm asking, since we're appointing somebody, did we look at both applicants?
I don't
have any hesitancy with Tim. I don't know what his background in aviation is. I know his wife was a Boeing official, executive. And he may have been as well before they came to our area, so... and that he's been attending the meetings. The other applicant that told me that he had put it in, and I had seen it on his application when we were processing the fire committee, was Dave Matthews from AMR. Mm. So if there's another opening at some point, that was the name. So we just keep them for 6 months, and if no opening comes up in that time. But since there is an opening, I thought I'd ask.
Okay.
So do you want to continue with this appointment? Or?
I'm fine with Tim. Like
yeah.
I said,
yeah.
The Boeing background, I think they know aviation and some aspects of it.
I'm good with that, then.
So that moves forward. The other one, do we always put multiple people on the same resolution, or do we do individual resolutions for each person?
I've heard they can be done multiple. We just talked about it yesterday.
Okay. So this is for the Illinois Valley Airport Advisory. I thought we were revamping the bylaws.
We are.
So do we know if any of these people are...
our third term?
No, or the alternates or the permanents or the... Because Gary at one point was listed as an alternate, and then at some point he's not. So
well, right now, Larry...
Like not as a first term or a second term of an alternate or a non-alternate. And
Larry... Trish and myself are working on the bylaws.
Awesome.
And we're trying to make it so that they're both the same for
similar.
Both organizations and looking at this, at the, will we have alternates in the future, so on and so forth. A lot of conversation there. So that should be done fairly quick, but I think we do need to, I don't know that either one of those were alternates.
Those usually.
Gary Buck and
well, Chief
Cameron.
Hulk, Chief Hulk was the other alternate. He's
gone.
He's resigned. So there's an opening.
But do we want to fill an alternate opening if we're potential of?
Both the chief and Gary thought they weren't alternates anymore. So that's why I was just trying to. Do you want to appoint anybody until you get the bylaws cleaned up, so you know who's who and what positions?
How does that affect our quorum out there? These two have
quorum. I think is of the appointed positions.
What's that?
Majority of the appointed positions. I don't think your vacancies count against your quorum.
Okay.
However, if somebody's absent, it counts against your quorum. A vacancy of a position doesn't count against your quorum. I don't. Each bylaws are different.
But I don't have a problem with. If we could certainly wait, I don't know how long this shouldn't take too long to do these bylaw things.
Don't forget to run them by legal.
Let's do that.
They're helping us with some bylaws in another committee that we're bringing to you. And they found some things we missed. And we're pushing back on some other things they added that we didn't want.
Then again,
negotiations
both of these people have been on there just reapplying for their.
I have no problem with Cameron.
Let's put these two guys in. I have no problem with Cameron and Gary being re-up for a second term.
That's fine.
Because they're not. So
we made one of them all today, or are they?
No.
We
go to the weekly business session consent calendar.
Gotcha.
So item 4E is matters from commissioners. I had something on last night. I met with a couple things. So first one will be in years past, prior to our quarterly meetings out there, we would, or they actually used to have monthly meetings out in the valley. But we also found that there was some issues with how they're noticed. There was no minutes being kept. There was no recordings being kept. And that's why we stopped having the meetings till we upped them back up on this quarterly basis. But the county used to actually take an ad in the IB newspaper and give department updates. This is what's going on in the county. And our next meeting in the valley is, and we would actually pay for an ad to kind of give regular updates on county things and kind of
committee meetings.
Brag on veterans is having a special event for, you know, their event that they had over here. Would have been something you could put in there
and their outreach program and so on and so forth.
So but they would do there's a picture of it and we can get it to you guys. Last night somebody showed it to JPR or Jason D. Robertson. He's like, oh, well, how did I get permission to do that? Well, what I know is that newspaper's ads are fairly inexpensive.
Right.
And it is one of the ways to best reach the valley. They have an online version of their paper and their printed media, and it's distributed extensively, and it's effective. But they only print once a week on Wednesdays, so your deadline of getting things in usually is a couple week buffer. But I loved hearing that there was an opportunity to give updates on current stuff going on about, or you know, in the county, and then highlighting the next meeting coming up. So it was a twofold: tell our story, what the county's doing, and making sure we're advertising the next meeting. It's a separate than meeting notification where you're giving an agenda and topics. This is purely a
informational.
Mark on your calendar, that meeting's going to be this day, but it's also highlighting county stuff. Well, and they make the ads for us if we give them the information.
Can we perhaps get a presentation and see how much it would cost to do an annual ad, you know, that was every time the episode went out, or the every time
weekly?
The weekly.
Do you want it weekly?
I don't know. I want to know how much it costs.
Quarterly?
Well,
and it'd be under $500.
But I don't know the cost, so I'd like to know.
Okay.
And I'd like to know the courier cost as well. So that we could look at both fairly and make a decision about how we, if we want to advertise and what that would look like.
I'd be happy to ask for a quote.
Yep.
And also get you examples of layout.
Yeah, and I do know
this is something
layout,
the county used to do.
And I think it's valuable. I want to do it. I just don't. I want to see the parameters and put a decision on it.
But it'd be specific to that paper in the sense that we're only doing meetings quarterly.
Right.
So then we can have it in, okay, the next meeting is this day, so we're keeping that in front of people. So if you guys are up for it, yes,
I'm up for it.
I text them saying, what do you think of this? And they're like, that'd be a great opportunity to, but they do color ads or various things, and it's just so much more reasonable than cost.
It'd be nice to have our logo in there.
So,
our info.
It also gets us in front of them.
Yeah.
And that's.
Yeah.
We hear that more and more and more and more that
maybe
a word is left out here.
Once a month, first one. But everyone works best with our quarterly meeting schedule so that we have notice we can advance instead of one day.
You don't want it to get boring. So once a quarter, I think, would be plenty.
And then I met with Youth Pathways. What's the second P?
Partnership.
Thank you. I kept calling it project last night. I knew that wasn't right, and I couldn't remember what the other P was. And then I remembered and forgot again. I met with Josh from Youth Pathways yesterday and clarified role and different things, and that the interns are assigned to the person as a mentor, as a supervisor, not necessarily the office. And so we can work out those details. But I had said, well, what if we come up with stuff as an office? And so it was part of why I probably took a little more protective possession of having just come from a meeting with them on clarification of
right.
okay and not okay.
That was handy.
And then I called afterwards and said, I just want you to have a heads up. This encounter happened. And at one point, the intern stated he was not comfortable. And so I want you to be aware so that you guys can do appropriate follow-up. And they absolutely reiterated that I have been vetted individually and approved individually by Ivy High School to have this working relationship with this individual. No other individual was vetted or approved by the high school to have the supervisory and mentor capacity. So if that public...
Well, that lets me out of a lot.
Yeah, well, and I thought of this afterwards. I should have said, have you ever seen the movie American President?
Sure.
And at one point they're like, you know, you may be running, but I am the president. Well, and that was just it. He is not an intern with a candidate for county commissioner. He is an intern with an elected county commissioner. That
right.
is different than a candidate saying, and that's what he said, as a candidate, I have a right to give him the alternate viewpoint. No, you do not. This is a professional capacity that he's doing an internship with a mentor and a supervisor assigned who has been vetted and approved by the school. And that does not mean he's subjected to any member of the public. And so they're going to follow up as a school and not just saying if candidates want access, which their statement was that was highly inappropriate. I said, well, that was my first statement as well. When I walked up and said, this is inappropriate. And so it went from there. They also stated that they're going to talk to the intern about just members of the public that may do that. So not just candidates who may be demanding access, but any types of members of the public that may be interested. Because they have ID cards they're supposed to wear, and it gives them their access on the transit and stuff. And I suggested that them wearing an ID card with their name on a public transit maybe exposes them to a risk of who knows
right.
their name, what
might
follows
be a
their
first name
yeah.
or something.
So pulling it out yeah. for the driver and putting it back away may be more, and they're like, oh, we didn't think of it. So they're learning as a program. We're learning
sure.
as the first round of
this mentees. Is new.
Yeah.
So there's going to be first, but based on my meeting with Josh yesterday at 4 and then my conversation with Gene afterwards, I just thought I'd give you guys feedback.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
So I, because it was for me, I'm like, is this appropriate? These, you know, putting boundaries, putting blah, blah, blah. And they're like, absolutely, this is.
He's a minor.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
so,
that too.
But even staff transporting is something that I had brought up in the meeting. And we had parameters around that. So if in my official capacity as a commissioner, going to an event as a commissioner can transport with, but there's a question of at the end of a transporting to a residence, at the end of a day, because that also came up after the meeting last night.
We offered to give a ride home because we didn't want him to walk
Wendy
home in the
dark. Wendy ended up giving him a ride.
Oh, okay.
So it's just one of those things. So they were actually recommending against us transporting to a residence. So it might be something that we ask them as a YPP board to verify. What do you do in a situation where it's night, it's cold, your student has walked to an event, what's the appropriate response?
Yeah.
Do we stay and make sure a parent comes and picks up? Transportation through your school district is an issue. We want the kids to have access. So, but again, professional boundaries and protecting against future allegations if relationships go awry, that we're protecting that youth and we're also protecting our staff from exposure.
Sure.
So just want to make sure that I didn't have a chance to address it last night, having just come from the meeting, and then we were there, and then it happened. So we kind of have to... It's
going
to occur in all departments.
Yeah,
but we're learning.
But,
that's,
yeah.
Yes.
And we're helping the program.
It's good that that situation, I don't even know what the situation was, because I was talking to somebody else, but it's good that it came up early. So we can address it early.
Candidate demanded yeah. access to the intern for the sake of sharing alternate viewpoints. And I suggested that it's not appropriate. They don't have a right to access to the student. If they want access to the student, they have to get it from the high school.
Yeah.
And And I confirmed that with Gene, who's the program saying, yes, he said, no, you were specifically vetted. You were specifically authorized. He has not been. And so that was clear. So.
Nope. It was timely.
Well, in that meeting with Josh yesterday, they also brought out some paperwork of goals and different things. So there's a way to make this more structured and coming up with different things and assignments and such. So I'll be going through that process.
I want that program to be a huge success.
Yes.
So anything we can do at this stage to make it a huge success.
They are not getting much response from department heads. So I know it was brought up in the manager meeting Monday. But the program would appreciate our support in talking to our departments about how that can happen. Quite frankly, I mean, I could think of a lot of departments that could take one.
Yeah.
And
I discussed it with community development yesterday because he's having trouble with one thing that he said was repetitious. And I go, hey, I got an idea for that. Yeah.
So where we'll are we at of that? I missed the first part of your conversation.
If you guys would be willing to talk to your liaison folks about thinking of ways that
considering
interns,
an intern,
yeah, because
considering a what?
Intern.
Okay.
Facilities comes to mind. That would be a great opportunity to show a profession where they can, you know, be paired with a maintenance person or something like that, or a division. My intern drove in with another intern from the Valley who's assigned to Kelly's Automotive. There's no business that's off limits. Now, there are a couple that have age restriction.
Sure.
Sheriff, jail, and community corrections, you know, because of certain things of certain people not having access to
juvenile justice, those are probably not appropriate.
Actually, juvenile justice could maybe in a certain office. So maybe not the detention shelter.
Right.
But one of the other programs, they can come up with a way to look at that if there's a way to see that kind of work. Because there have been some that have asked about doing practicums and different things that people that maybe want to be a PO someday or a juvenile PO. There's prevention program. There's different things, yeah. Alcohol drug treatment. They take interns already in the alcohol drug treatment program through RCC. Because students in the programs have to do volunteer hours already. Josh mentioned they're not getting much response from department heads. So if you guys feel so led, that was my two things. Any other matters from commissioners?
This afternoon we have the 2 p.m. Sand Creek Bridge reopening.
Thank you for representing us on that.
Yep.
Because you're on a lipstick.
I am.
Thank you.
It's not on my calendar, but I was planning.
It's not?
Not yet.
It's probably still online.
We'll fix it.
But I appreciate you covering that, and so that I could do the two memorials today.
Sure.
And then I'll have the airport graduation tomorrow afternoon. And
I'm
I'll
going
try
to Dan Shepherd.
Thank you for doing that.
And I'll try to get to Dan Shepherd's as soon as I can get out of drug court graduation to go to acknowledge. So any specific messaging you would like me to relay on behalf of the board tomorrow?
For the drug, no.
Okay.
I think our presence there, and you'll have a few words to say.
Yeah.
That is such a sweet program in our community. So I was able to go last year, and it's just like, wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Awesome. Any other matters from commissioners? Any matters from staff?
Nothing.
Okay. So if there is nothing further, we can be adjourned at 10:23.